Radio Prague News.
New information released by the European Commission has shown the Czech Republic lagging behind in drawing funds from the European Union. The Czech Senate has backed a bill on same-sex partnerships approved by the Chamber of Deputies last month. 10 football officials, including referees and the former owner of the Synod Football Club, have been found guilty of corruption. Information released by the European Commission on Thursday has shown the Czech Republic lagging behind in drawing money from European Union funds. According to the European Commissioner for Regional Policy, Danuta Hübner, the country has used roughly 20% since joining the Union in 2004 from resources available until the end of 2006. The EU allocated the Czech Republic 2.6 billion euros, the equivalent of 3 billion US dollars, for 2004 to 2006. But last year the country drew only around 258 million US dollars worth. Only one country, neighboring Slovakia, drew less. Commissioner Hübner has pointed out that most newcomers to the EU fall behind in drawing subsidies, but she stressed the situation was gradually improving. The Czech Senate has backed a bill on same-sex partnerships approved by the Chamber of Deputies last month. On Thursday, 45 of 65 senators present voted in favor of the bill, which will entitle gay couples to legal union, allowing access, for example, to a partner's medical information or inheritance rights. Gay couples will also be able to raise children, although the bill does not allow them to adopt. Some opponents of the bill, notably the Christian Democrats, voted against, having they've criticized the legislation as threatening the standing of the traditional family. The bill must now be signed by the president to go into effect. If approved, it will make the Czech Republic the 13th European country to recognize same-sex partnerships, but the Czech Republic will be the first post-communist country to do so. Three officials from the First Division's FC Slovacko Football Club, formerly FC Synot, as well as seven referees, have been found guilty of corruption. Fines handed down ranged between the equivalent of $2,000 to $12,000. The biggest penalties handed out on Thursday were to the former owner of the club, Ivo Valenta, as well as manager Jaroslav Haškík. Haškík and the seven referees have also been banned from undertaking any football-linked business activities for periods of up to 5 years. Finally, a quick look at the weather. Friday is expected to see more freezing conditions with temperatures at about minus 5 degrees Celsius. Sunshine, however, is expected throughout the day. I'm Jan Vellinger. That's the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Peter Smith. Coming up, the mafia-style killing of a controversial Prague businessman thrust the spotlight upon the shady links between legitimate business and the international criminal underworld. More in a moment. Also, it's been so cold in Prague last week that a special tent village has been set up as a place for the homeless to crash down for the night. And in Panorama, Brian Kennedy looks into the rich legacy of Roma folk tales. Please stay tuned. The Czech papers carry reports this morning of last night's mafia-style killing of a controversial businessman linked to the multi-million crown food and chemicals conglomerate Setuza. František Mrázek, partner of another highly controversial entrepreneur, Tomáš Pita, was shot dead as he left his office in Prague. Rob Cameron joins me in the studio now. So what do we know about this man, Mr. Mrázek, Rob?
Well, Peter, quite a bit. None of it good, at least if you believe what they're saying in the papers. The media are calling him a controversial businessman. Police claim he was actually the head of a substantial criminal underworld and one of the wealthiest men in the country.
OK, so how did he make all this money?
Well, it all started in the 1970s in socialist Czechoslovakia when he began selling electronic devices to Russia. After the fall of communism in 1989, he bought a brewery and became involved in the food industry. But the real controversy began in 2000 when he and his partners gained control of Setuza under suspicious circumstances after the collapse of the beleaguered IPB bank.
Okay, but I understand it doesn't end there.
Indeed, it doesn't. Mr. Mrazek is also close to a number of discredited politicians, including the disgraced former finance minister Ivo Svoboda, who is currently serving a prison sentence for fraud. He was believed to be involved in large-scale credit fraud and was also friends with the Israeli businessman Shlomo Alon, the father of Barak Alon, who cheated a Komerchny banker out of more than 8 billion crowns. The police were also investigating Mr. Mrazek in connection with a number of high-profile kidnappings and murders.
Okay, well, it all sounds very serious. Has anybody ever been brought to justice for these crimes?
No, it should be pointed out that he was never convicted of any of the above. He was, in fact, only convicted of one crime in 1986 when he received a suspended sentence for smuggling antiques.
OK, well, this, of course, comes at a very crucial time for the Setuga saga, doesn't it? Can you tell us about that?
Yes, František Mrázek was believed to be the brains and probably one of the owners of Český Olej, the group which controls Setuza. Setuza owes more than 4 billion crowns to the state-run bailout agency, the CKA, and the leading private equity agency, PPF, wants to buy that debt claim, but the state wants to transfer it to something called the Farming and Forestry Support and Guarantee Fund, and therefore win a stake in Setuza. Media reports say at the time of Mr. Mrazek's death, he and Tomáš Peter, his business companion, were widely assumed to have fallen out over what to do with this debt.
It all sounds very complicated stuff, of course. You can listen to it again on the internet. I should remind you of that. Any clues as to who actually killed Mr. Mrazek?
No, not yet. All we know is what the police are saying. They say it looks like a professional hit job. He was killed with a single shot by a gunman from a distance, apparently using a sight. And there are no more details at the moment. But I think, Peter, it is safe to say that his killing will only reinforce popular opinion among Czechs that the business environment here can be a rather dangerous place in which to operate when so much money is involved.
Okay, thank you very much, Rob Cameron. Right, well, regular listeners will know that the South Korean car maker Hyundai is considering opening a huge new plant in North Moravia. Well, if it happens, it will transform the region's economy. A decision had been due at the end of December, but talks stalled. On Thursday, a delegation from Hyundai completed a fresh round of negotiations in Prague, but still no contracts have been signed. The Minister of Industry and Trade, Milan Urban, said at a press briefing on Thursday morning that he believed a final deal would be announced at the end of next month. Also there was Thomas Hruder, the director of investment agency Czech Invest. Ian Willoughby asked him why the talks were taking longer than originally envisaged.
I don't really think that taking longer than expected. It's a really big project, and the main focus is to make sure that we make a right contract, which is good for both parties and which reflects all the possible aspects of future implementation in the Czech Republic. So time, of course, is very important, but the quality is much more important. And in case of such a large investment, this is quite usual case.
What is the next step?
Well, we just continue the negotiations, and we have to finalize the agreement. And of course, this is the most time-consuming part of the whole process.
I understand now it's a question of details, including what language the contract will be in. Will it be in Czech? Will it be in English? Is there any chance, do you think, that the deal could fail at this point?
Well, I'm very optimistic, but nothing's fixed until the final decision is being made. So even though we are all optimistic, there's always a risk that this might fail, even though I don't expect this risk to be very high.
When will we know definitely, finally?
Well, we're optimistic. Both parties are trying to reach a conclusion before the end of February. But if there are some outstanding issues, then, of course, it might continue. As I said, the most important is to make sure that the contract is right and is good for both parties.
Just to put this deal in context, how important is it to this country? Is it really going to be the biggest investment ever in the Czech Republic?
Yes, it is, and it's going to be very important. And I think the greatest significance is in the fact that it's going to be located in a region which has a long-term structural unemployment. And we therefore believe that the impact on the region will be really, really positive. And that this particular region actually needs a very strong impulse. And we believe that this might be the case.
The plant itself will employ about 3,000 people. How many more people in the region do you think will also get jobs, like knock-on jobs, so to speak?
We expect that the overall job creation should reach a number of roughly 15,000 people.
Letná Plain in Prague is best known as a site of communist-era mass parades and outdoor concerts, but the extreme cold snap of recent days has changed the face of Letná. There are now 7 army tents on the site, being used as a temporary village for the city's homeless. The daily paper, Mladá Fronta Dnes, has compared the emergency shelter to a MASH for the homeless. Linda Mashtalij reports.
Prague's current deep freeze has inspired a first for the city. Earlier this week, the army set up 7 tents on Letná Plain, meant to provide 100 of Prague's homeless with relief from the bitter nighttime cold. Equipped with wood-burning ovens and toilets, this emergency relief operation is a unique sight in the Czech capital, where official census data counts 4,500 people homeless, though social workers claim the numbers are twice that many. Meanwhile, shelters only provide 900 beds for the city's homeless. Jiří Wolf, spokesman for Prague City Hall, explains why they decided to build a provisional tent city on Letná.
Tak toto rozhodnutí vzniklo na základě terénního průzkumu, kdy opravdu bylo zjištěno.
The decision was taken on the basis of a field survey, and it became clear that some people without a roof over their heads don't have a place to go in these arctic conditions. These people's lives were at risk, so the city administration decided to help them and organize an emergency shelter where they can spend the night.
Kde by mohli přečkat noc.
After 2 nights up and running, it seems the tent city is a great success. Jiří Wolf on how word has spread.
Tak první noc bylo ubytováno 65 osob a dnešní noc vlastně strávilo.
Now the first night there were 65 people who stayed overnight, and last night 158 people stayed in the tent city. In each of these tents there are 20 cots. But since 150 people turned up last night, some did not get an individual cot to sleep on, so they had to share and sat on the beds. The important thing is that they were in a warm place. It was impossible to accommodate another 40 people who arrived, so they were taken overnight to a day centre, where there are only chairs and tables, but even this was surely helpful in their case.
Ten people have died in the Czech Republic as a result of freezing temperatures, which have been hovering around negative 15 Celsius, and 5 of these casualties have been in Prague. The tent city was inspired by a similar effort in Bratislava, the capital city of neighboring Slovakia. Prague's facility is expected to stay in operation as long as the deep freeze holds, roughly another week, perhaps 2. Run by the charitable organization HOPE and guarded by police, the site is only in operation during the night.
Ten režim je 12-hodinový, to znamená, že můžou přijít večer od 6:30.
There is a 12-hour regime, which means that they can arrive in the evening at 6:30 p.m. when the facility begins accepting people, and their stay ends at 6:30 a.m. Of course, part of the service includes basic provisions, some soup, tea and fruit. We decided on the 12-hour regime, partly out of staffing considerations, but I think that by 6:30 in the morning they have the option of going to the various day centres which open at 7 a.m. It's all in line with how this kind of aid works.
Now report from Linda Mashtali is reporting on the tent city at Letná. Well, part of the duet that I'm sure you'll recognise there from Mozart's Don Giovanni. It's one of the greatest operas of all time, and it had its first ever performance here in Prague in 1787. If we are to believe the stories, Prague had a special place in Mozart's heart, so it's apt that Radio Prague will be joining in celebrations of his 250th birthday this weekend. In his lifetime, Mozart's music was very well received here, and he made several visits. He stayed at the Villa Batramka, which still stands in the Prague district of Smíchov. In Mozart's day, it was home to the celebrated and, by all reports, beautiful Czech opera singer Josefina Dušková. And in Friday's edition of The Arts, we'll be visiting the villa and finding out more about Mozart's special affection for his hostess.
She was a beautiful woman, great singer, she loved music. Husband of Josefina Dušek, he was 22 years older. So she had much close relationship to Mozart. Of course, there are many stories around that. And some people said that it couldn't be only friendship, that it must have been something more. For example, he composed a great composition for her right here in Bertramka.
That's on Friday. Then on Sunday, there'll be a special edition of Encore. We'll be looking at some of the music that Mozart composed during his stays in the Bohemian capital. Here's a taste of the Prague Symphony that, like Don Giovanni, was first performed at the Nostitz Theatre, another Prague landmark that you can still visit to this day. Yes, Radio Prague celebrating 250 years since the birth of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Now, it's been so bitterly cold in Prague over the last few days, it has reminded me indeed of being in Russia in the mid-90s, I have to say. Now, what we need, I think, is something to warm the cockles of our heart. Maybe a few Roma folk tales, and that is the focus for Brian Kennedy in today's Panorama.
Theatre director Pavla Domborowska has long been fascinated by Romani culture, inspired by the vigorous, joyful, and often tragic tone of gypsy music, and enthralled by this people's storytelling tradition. And so she set out to adapt for the theatre a collection of Romani folk tales. They were compiled, or rather lovingly transcribed, by the noted scholar Dr. Milena Hubshmanova in the early 1960s and 70s. But the project got off to a difficult start. Director Pavla Domborowska was shocked to find how little she really understood of these naive fairy tales and how opposed Dr. Hubshmanova was to the project.
Já si té romské kultury hodně cením a prostě to obdivuju za ten náboj a za tu energii, kterou to v sobě obsahuje. No. Napadlo mě to tak, že jsem chtěla dělat nějaký romský téma.
I really appreciate Roma culture. I love their energy and I wanted to give them credit for that. I wanted to do a play with a Roma theme or based on a Roma story, as we also often play for children in orphanages where there are a lot of Roma kids. A lot of these children, I noticed, think that being a Rom is a bad thing. It seemed like nobody was encouraging them to be proud of their origins.
A potom taky jsem četla knížku paní Mileny Hipšmanové Romské pohádky, kde jsem vlastně vycházela z toho příběhu.
Later, I also read a book, a collection of Roma folk tales compiled by Milena Hubshmanova, a book full of real stories told by Roma storytellers. They are amazing. They are not edited as literature. The people who were recounting them had been telling these stories for years, passed down for generations. And this inspired me to show it on stage.
A tohle mě provokovalo k tomu vymyslet nějakou obdobu na jevišti, vyjádřit to nějak v tom divadle, vyjádřit ty zkratky. A tak jsme se do toho pustili. No.
The Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia in 1968 brought an end to the Prague Spring. Reforms led by Communist Party Secretary Alexander Dubček, he hoped, would introduce socialism with a human face. With the hardline communists putting aside their attempts to assimilate the Roma to focus on crushing the dissident movement, this tragic and difficult time saw the first ever publication of literature written in Romani. It was around that time that Dr. Hubshmanova, who died in a traffic accident last autumn while at a conference abroad, began preparing the Romani stories she'd collected for publication. Romské pohádky, or Romani fairy tales, came out in 1973. In an interview with Radio Prague, she recalled that flowering of Romani literature in the Czech lands.
Well, Romani literature is very young. It really started to be created in 1969, 1970, when the first Union of Roma was founded. They published a journal, Romanolil. And the first time, I should say, the first time in history, the Roma started to write in Romani, and also the things were published in this journal. And then, of course, again, this normalizace, so-called, came back, and the policy of assimilation, again, Romani was not allowed to be publicly I mean, spoken, published, used. So again, it stopped.
Elena Humshmanova had studied Hindi, Urdu and Bengali in Prague, and in the early 1950s became increasingly interested in the Romani language, which also has its roots in India. She had great difficulties with the regime in the hardline 1970s, as she strongly opposed official attempts to force Roma to assimilate. She played a huge role in reviving and recording the Romani language in Czechoslovakia and encouraging Roma people to publish their stories. As such, she was fiercely protective of the culture.
Jsem se s paní Milenou Hipšmanovou setkala.
Theater director Pavla Domborovská again.
Když jsem o tom začala nějak přemýšlet o té inscenaci.
I met Milena Hipšmanová before I started to work on the play and I was surprised by her reaction because I expected she would be very happy that we wanted to do something like that, but she was actually horrified and tried to discourage me. After a while, she admitted that she didn't believe that we, as Gaje, non-Roma, were capable of fully understanding the stories.
Nevěří tomu, že jsme schopni jako Gajové nějakým způsobem hlouběji ten příběh předvést.
Dr. Hubšmanová refused at first to give her blessing to the adaptation or collaborate on it in any way, as experience had shown that the majority white Czech population had completely misinterpreted the stories as naive fairy tales. But Romani tales are seldom classic stories of good versus evil. Paramisa, as they are called in Romani, are often fantastic, heroic tales told by masters of the art and more for the entertainment of adults than children, for the passing on of collective history, wisdom, and advice. Unlike Czech fairy tales, there are seldom picture-perfect happy endings.
Setkala se s nepochopením, protože to, co Gajo považuje za humor a velice se baví.
So she sat in on some readings of her book and explained how what a Gajo considers funny, very entertaining, well, Rome might sense something deeper in the episode in the context of the Romani experience. And coming from her, that was a real hard kick for me.
Takový kopanec, který mi uštědřila.
At that moment, I decided to involve Roma so that such problems wouldn't happen.
S romskými umělci, aby k tomuhle nedošlo, k tomu zjednodušení.
And really, there are many aspects to the stories that may at first glance seem like pure mischief or a simple joke, yet contain deeper meanings. So I tried to get below the surface of the jokes and get across the serious undercurrent that might be in the text.
A tohle jsem se taky snažila nějakým způsobem rozkryt v té inscenaci nebo jakoby jít za ty jenom za ty prvoplánové forky a rozkryt ty hlubší významy, které v tom textu můžou být.
The result, after over a year of more serious study and working with Romani musicians, dancers, singers, and first-time actors, and with Dr. Hubshmanova's blessing, was Chytrý Hloupý Rom, or The Clever Stupid Rom. The play, which is based on two tales, How a Rom Went for the Apple of Youth and How the Rom Got the Witch's Girl, borrows heavily from others in the compilation. It was first performed in September and had its Prague premiere this past weekend. It's the story of a Romani boy who turns out badly, so there was nothing to be done but to put him to school. Once there, the boy excels, falls in love with a princess, encounters witches and dragons, and outfoxes them all with the help of a magic horse, but is killed when rescuing a damsel in distress. Zoltán Tolvaj, who is all of 15, played the starring role.
Zoltán Tolvaj.
I was dancing in Drom, ensemble Čerčenia. Pavla came there to the group and asked us if we'd like to play with them. I thought, why not give it a try? So I did, and enjoyed it, and I'm really very happy that I'm here. As long as I live, I would like to act.
Without giving away too much more of the plot, the clever, stupid Rom is revived by a witch and beds her daughter, whom he eventually marries once the king gives him a construction permit to build a house of his own. A simple tale, well told, whose deeper meaning for the Roma audience cannot be explained in the time we have now together. but which clearly struck a chord for the cast. Singer Ivana Vilhemova, aged 22, was the leading lady. She learnt of the production from a friend with whom she has sung at memorial events for Romani victims of the Holocaust.
This is the first time I learned about traditional Roma tales. In our home, we don't speak Romani, so I don't remember my grandma telling me any Roma stories. So I'm glad I can get to know some now, thanks to Milena Hupshmanova, who spent a big part of her life visiting Roma families and collecting these beautiful stories. The play inspired me, but I don't read fairy tales in my free time, for one, and if I did, I'd want to read them in the traditional Romani language, as they should be told. That doesn't mean I don't want to learn the language. I do. I need to, also for singing.
Brian Canty there with Panorama. My name's Peter Smith. We're out of time. Till next time, bye-bye.
Machuca, guina oncha, guina ven. Palomaro chuca, chibi pen, guina ven. Arisha gozero, metka ya, men bashova. Hola, guina chuca, guina ven.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 8h30, 8h57. Europe, 9860, 11600. 17h30, 17h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 15710, 19h30, 19h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 9430, 23h, 23h27, Amérique du Nord, 5930, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz.